collect stories of late bloomers like these, especially writers. Like, for years, I've admired Penelope Fitzgerald. She wrote some really wonderful, lean, compact novels. Her last one, The Blue Flower, is about the German poet Novalis, and it's the one people consider her masterpiece. But the most remarkable thing about Penelope Fitzgerald is that the woman today, considered one of the greatest British novelists of the last century, didn't actually begin writing until she was nearly 60, which is part of what attracted biographer Hermione Lee.
It's an extraordinary story. She was born in 1916 and she starts writing stories from the age of about four. She was a fantastically bright schoolgirl and undergraduate at Oxford. And then it's the war and everything is blown up into the air and everybody, a lot of people kind of lose their way. She then made what turned out to be a bit of a disastrous marriage.
That's kind of an understatement.
And like many women, who start late, she spent, you know, her midlife years in some very difficult circumstances, bringing up children, trying to keep things together and not writing novels. So when she started publishing books in 1975, yeah, around the age of 60. So it is a really remarkable late life career.
I'm curious about what was going on during those long years when she wasn't writing and was struggling to keep her family together. Penelope Fitzgerald had three children, I think, over the course of 6 years. And this husband, Desmond Fitzgerald.
Yes.
It's very hard not to see him as an immense drain on her.
Well, I got rather fond of poor Desmond, but the story very briefly is that she met this rather dashing, handsome Irishman who was going to be a lawyer and was in the Irish Guards. They got married in the middle of the war and he came back very changed. He was clearly very traumatized and he was an alcoholic. He couldn't really keep his career going. And then the whole thing fell apart. They had clearly overstretched themselves. They left London in a great hurry. They went to live in a East Coast town called Southwold, where things went from bad to worse. And then they went back to live in London in the early 60s on a barge on the Thames, which had been an old coal barge.
Yeah, the barge thing. I mean, it sounds maybe at first blush a little romantic, but in fact, it leaked. There would be water up to their ankles.
There were rats. There was always a puddle in the middle of the thing. They couldn't wash on the barge, so they had to go up with their scratchy towels and bar of soap up to the King's Road pub. Public bars. And all this while she was teaching to make ends meet. And there's a wonderful occasion on which she goes to school looking more than usually harassed and says to the girls in her class, "I'm sorry I'm late, but my house sank."
It really? All the way to the bottom of the Thames?
Not quite, but so much so that everything was ruined.
And so at that point, were they homeless and with no
possessions?
They were
homeless. They were homeless. They went into sheltered housing. They were housed in a very dreary council flat, which is like public funded housing, where they lived for many years while she trudged into town to do her teaching. And Desmond was just hopeless. I mean, Desmond was embezzling from his firm. He was forging checks in order to get money, partly presumably to go to the pub and partly, I guess, to pay for household bills. So it's an awful story. And it's a story of someone who's perseveringly trying to get her three children through school and university while all this is going on and stifling whatever talents. I think of it like an underground river, you know, running along, buried, and then suddenly, when the time finally comes, up it comes like a great fountain.
So I guess the question is, did that dead period have some value? You know, do you think that the novels she wrote are as brilliant as they are because they came so late in life?
Well, this is the million-dollar question. I mean, there are two things to say about it, I think. One is that yes, I'm sure the answer is yes, that the novels have this mulch or this manure, if you like, underneath them, a rich compost of life and experience and patience and waiting, out of which come these astonishingly pared down, economical works of fiction. But I think the other part of your question, which is would she have written the book she did if she hadn't had these fallow or frustrated years, is that certainly the early books come right out of those experiences. So the life they had on the East Coast when she worked in a bookshop turned straight into a wonderful early novel called The Bookshop. The Life on the Sinking Barge turns straight into a novel called Offshore, which in fact won the Booker Prize. Mm. And so she used these experiences. She was saving them up in order to use them.
Well, there's a story you tell about when she won the Booker Prize for her novel Offshore, you know, the novel about living on that terrible houseboat. Mm-hmm. And the literary world treated her with such snobbery. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody had expected her to win. Mm-hmm. And you write about how she went on a live TV program and they talked with her there about how she really shouldn't have won and then asked her to comment on who should have.
It's absolutely extraordinary. I've watched that program several times with my jaw on my knees. So it was Robert Robinson, who was sort of a, you know, well-known media book figure in England in those years. And he treats her with astonishing condescension. And she's wearing a sort of deeply unfashionable floral frock with long sleeves and, you know, and sort of flat schoolmarm flat shoes, and she hasn't done her hair, and you know, she's got her hands in her lap, and they all had expected Naipaul to win. And so they talk over her, and they call her Mrs. Fitzgerald, and every so often Robert Robinson says to her, "Well, Mrs. Fitzgerald, I hardly like to say this to you, but I really do think the wrong book won," you know, this kind of thing. And she was mortified, actually. She was very angry and upset about it. But you wouldn't have known it from looking at her on the programme. She looks like someone who would rather be in another room, but in a vague and benign sort of way.
Penelope Fitzgerald comes across as a fascinating, kind of secretive, elusive woman. I mean, a woman who hid her talent and was also very good at hiding herself. I mean, she sort of took that on and would deliberately present herself as this kind of dotty, eccentric old lady.
She did used to play this act of a sort of daffy, absent-minded lady. There's a hilarious interview with a journalist after she's won the Booker Prize, who, of course, says, "And what are you going to spend the money on, Mrs. Fitzgerald?" And she goes into this long riff about how, you know, she might spend it on an ironing board, or she might spend it on a new typewriter that you know, doesn't get your fingers dirty when you have to change the ribbon on the typewriter. It's like a little piece of performance art. It's a game. It's a game for her, yes.
I have to say, there's a tiny little detail, but it's one of the things I really love about her. She cheated at games.
She cheated at games with a 3-year-old grandson. You know, I mean, she she was phenomenally competitive. She cheated at games with her husband when he was dying. I mean, she really liked to win.
Well, that casts an interesting light on her decision to begin writing and her stamina and drive as a writer. I mean, as we said, you know, she began close to 60, published brilliant, brilliant books up into, 70s, 80s. That takes enormous strength, and maybe that's where some of that competitive spirit, that ambition, finally came out.
She was redoubtable. I mean, it's a sad story in many ways, although it's also a hopeful story because she begins so late and she becomes famous at 80 with her last novel, The Blue Flower, which won the National Book Critics Circle Award and became for a short time a big name in the States. But then there wasn't another novel, and she died at 83, and that was very sad. But yes, it's a personality of great resilience and stoicism and courage and endurance, and those qualities are qualities that she writes about also.
Did she enjoy her success? I mean, her success came so late in her life, you know, at a time when people often reevaluate their old definitions of success and throw them out and, you know, find them a bit empty.
She did like it. She liked it and she made good use of it. You saw her everywhere. You know, you would go to a literary party and there would be Penelope Fitzgerald quietly chattering away in a corner, wearing sort of indescribable old pinafores, or, you know, I mean, not looking like a tramp, but certainly individualistic, but loving it, actually. I think she had two lives, really, in late life. She was very much a family person. She lived with her daughters, and she had a lot of grandchildren, was very devoted to them, but she did love being a well-known literary figure.
It's a wonderful story. Thank you so much for telling it.
Thank you.
Hermione Lee's biography of Penelope Fitzgerald is one of the New York Times 10 best books of the year.